When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
To the Hollow Sky Podcast. We are your hosts. I'm Steven.
And Kyle.
And it's Monday, Hollow Cult. You know what that means? You've chosen us to hang out with you, to get you through your work week. And for that, we appreciate you. We're glad to be here. Happy that you've come to hang out with us. This episode is going to be part two in the Devil's Den, Terry Lovelace abductions. We're actually getting into the Devil's Den abduction today. If you didn't listen to last week's episode, go back and do that. Kind of touch on some other experiences he had prior to the timeline's a little convoluted, but you can go check that out before you get here. If you're new here, welcome. Me and Kyle like to chit chat a little bit, do some little house cleaning things. If you're not into that, just fast forward to about 6 minutes and you'll get to the crux of the show. If you're a regular, welcome back, you weirdo. Happy to have you. We got to get through the business. You know the drill. Check us out all our social medias, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, TikTok, Discord, Reddit. Search up the Hollow Sky Podcast. You're going to find us there. Come be part of the community. Join the cult. Super cool cult. Like, as far as cults go, probably the best one around. You know? And come have a good time. If you've got a listener experience, paranormal happening that you would like to share with the rest of the Hollow Cult, on our Thursday show, Kyle's got some info for you.
I do. It's easy. It's always in the show notes, but I'll make it even easier for you. HollowSkyPodcast@gmail.com. That's all you got to do. Write your story out. Shoot it over to that email. You're golden. Or you can go to the website. There's a little box on the front page. You can also enter it all in there and hit send. It'll get to us either way. Do that so we can make you famous.
That's what we do.
It is what we do.
Realistically. If you'd like to support the show, plenty of ways to do it. We got a Patreon. Go over there and check that out. $7 a month. You get extra episodes. Over 50 over there. You get these episodes dropped early, dropped ad-free. And everybody loves the no ads, right? You also get Casket Breath jams over there. That's our AI, any genre you can think of, band that we created. You also get early access to merch coupons, all kinds of good stuff. Speaking of merch, HollowSkyPodcast.com. We got a store over there. You can go check out the shirts, check out some hats, some beanies, stickers, all sorts of good things. Best thing you can do is share the show. It's free. It helps us out. It keeps the word going, you know, keeps the ball rolling, keeps the show growing. It rhymes a little bit. I'm basically a rapper. It's fine.
Obviously.
Yeah. But yes, do that. You can also go over to our YouTube if you'd like a different listening experience. You can watch our beautiful faces over there. Talk about these very experiences and shows. Hit a like, hit a subscribe. You know the drill. You can also go to wherever you listen to podcasts, your podcatcher, if you will, and leave us a 5-star rating and review. If I find it, I will gladly shout you out. This week's 5-star rating and review comes to us from our friend JR2046. JR says 5 stars on the level. It's nice listening to a podcast that has hosts that are grounded in reality but have open minds to what is possible. They get right into things and keep it interesting. Thanks, guys. JR, thank you. Thank you for taking the time to leave us some kind words. Greatly appreciated.
It is appreciated. There's not too much positivity gets thrown around these days. So we'll take every bit of it that we can get.
Yes. Yes. Kind of keeps that fire lit under us when we know it you does. Guys are still enjoying the banter that we've been bringing the last six and a quarter years.
It's a long time.
It's a long time.
Long time.
Been a long road, Holocult. That being said, time for a word from our sponsors. Hey, Holocult, have you ever gotten back from a paranormal investigation and woken up with some funky symptoms like a swollen, itchy eye, tight pain in your neck, or weird cold symptoms that just won't go away, and then you immediately Googled it or searched TikTok to see what's wrong? We've all gone down that rabbit hole, but it's time to get the help and care you need with ZocDoc. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare high-quality in-network doctors and click to instantly book an appointment. We're talking about booking in-network appointments with more than 100,000 doctors across every specialty, from mental health to dental health, primary care to urgent care, and more. You can filter doctors who take your insurance, are located nearby, are a good fit for any medical need you may have, and are highly rated by verified patients. Luckily, I haven't had to book an actual doctor's appointment. I've stayed pretty healthy, but I have used the app to book a mock appointment, and it is great. It's so easy. It's a one-stop shop for any of your booking needs. You can search up doctors close by, doctors in your insurance network, ones that have short wait times. It really is nice. So stop putting off those doctor's appointments and go to ZocDoc.com/Holo1 to find and instantly book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/HOLO1. ZocDoc.com/Holo1. Hey, Holocult, do you remember a time where if you wanted weed, you had to meet up with some sketchy dude behind the dumpster in a Denny's parking lot? Well, you don't have to do that anymore, because you can get federally legal THC shipped right to your front door. How can you get that done? With Mood. Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC right to your door. And you can get 20% off your first order at mood.com/HOLO and enter coupon code HOLO. I'm talking high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. Every Mood product is made from pesticide free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code HOLO. So head over to mood.com/HOLO, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use coupon code HOLO when you check out to save 20% on your first order. All right. Jumping back into it, again, if you haven't listened to last week's episode, I'll just recant it a little bit. We're talking about Terry Lovelace, and initially I was going to dive into The Devil's Den Abduction, which I'm reading that book. Definitely check it out. Incident at Devil's Den, written by Terry, like about his accounts. It's a quick read. It's a good read. I suggest to do it. And I'm not going to go into everything that he talks about in the book because I want you guys to check it out. But we went over a couple things, the implant that he found in his leg and incident of a UFO over one of the nuclear silos that he was kind of monitoring with his time in the military. This particular episode is going to get into the actual abduction at Devil's Den. So we're going to dive into it with another quote from Terry. I started last week's episode out with one. And this one is, being abducted by aliens is akin to getting your arm caught in a piece of farm equipment. You may get loose, but you'll surely lose something in the process.
That's gross.
Something about that. Everything about that sucks.
Everything about that sucks.
Yeah, that's terrible.
It is. I'm glad that I don't feel that way about my speckled past.
Yeah. Yeah, everything about that is not cool.
No, most of my shit is probably
suppressed,
buried and repressed and all that good stuff.
Yeah, which is probably,
and I'm just soon to keep it that way.
Probably for the best, considering.
Yeah.
So, fast forward 2 years from the silo incident. It's 1977. And Terry and Toby are kind of still thinking about that night. Like, that's a pretty big deal, obviously, seeing a UFO over the silo and being interrogated about it and everything. So they were kind of in the work grind. And Toby comes to Terry with an idea. He's like, hey, you want to take a weekend off? Just go do some bro shit. Like maybe just go out in the woods, camp, just get away from the base and just chill. Terry, however, is not much of an outdoorsman. He's like, that
Lame.
Doesn't sound that cool. Right. And Toby just keeps pressing for it. He's like, hey, it's cheap. You know, there's 100 different things we could be doing, but we don't have all that much money to spend. So immediately Terry's like, I'm going to nix the whole idea by saying, you know what? Our wives aren't going to want to come. They're not going to be into that. And Toby's like, no, it's just going to be a dude's trip. We'll get some beer. We'll go hang out. And just keeps pushing. Outside of jogging, Terry's other hobby is nature photography. He's always buying like old 35mm cameras and taking pictures. So Toby starts pushing that. He's like, come on, man, we'll pick a spot. It'll be cool. You can take your cameras out. We'll get some pictures. It'll be a whole thing. He brings up this big nature preserve across the Arkansas border called Devil's Den. He sold the scenery, sold there not being any light pollution, and the fact that it might be their only chance to really get out to like a big untouched nature preserve for quite a while. So Terry mulls over it a little bit, and finally he's like, you know what? That doesn't sound like that bad of an idea. Just getting away from things, it'll be fine. He bought a new 35mm camera he wanted to get out and take some shots with. And he agreed to it. So they start gathering supplies and planning for their trip. They settle on Devil's Den because of its scenery and its location in the middle of the nature preserve. Obviously, there were closer campsites, but they weren't that great, right? Nothing more than like parking spots with camping amenities. And just the fact that it's out in the middle of nowhere was really a big selling point for Terry. So they pack up their shit and take off. You know, just doing bro stuff. Me and Kyle's done it before heading to conferences. And it's like a whole thing, right?
Yeah. It's a good time. Like, why would you not find that enjoyable? And I mean, for most guys, he would have had him convinced at beer and fire.
Yeah.
Yeah. He'd have been like, sold.
That's exactly what I put here. Like they started packing up their stuff. They brought their military grade DEET and sunscreen and all kinds of stuff. They got cooler and beers and sodas and hot dogs. Just the average bro camping.
I mean, it doesn't sound like that bad of a time if you ask me.
No, especially if you've been stuck on the military base forever. Like it's going to be nice to trek out a little bit and not have to worry about it. About 3 hours into the trek, though, Terry starts to think, did I remember my camera?
Oh.
He did not. So he's like super bummed about that. Do we waste essentially 6 hours to drive 3 hours back? Get my camera. Finally, he's like,
no,
we're not going to spend 6 hours. There's some supposed lore about the name Devil's Den, about it being cursed.
Well, yeah, it has the devil in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's and usually a red flag.
There were some odd occurrences that had happened prior to and after Terry's experiences that I noted a little bit. Terry noted them at the beginning of his book. There was a missing 411 case with this little girl who disappeared in the Devil's Den. She was gone for quite some time. And then out of nowhere, as the searchers were looking for her, she stumbles out of a cave in the middle of Devil's Den Park. Walks out. They've been searched before. She walks out. She goes, "Here I am." And they're like, "Oh, hey." The weird thing is she'd been gone for multiple days, but she was not dehydrated. She was not malnourished. Wherever she went, she had been taken care of.
And she didn't remember any of it or didn't talk about any of it?
No.
That's creepy.
It's creepy. And recently, probably within the last 10 years, a man has disappeared in Devil's Den under mysterious circumstances. I think it was 2016 or something.
That's pretty recent.
Found his backpack, found his cell phone, found his flashlights, found his camera. Did not find him.
That gives me goosebumps thinking about it.
That's why we need to go.
I mean, I'm not opposed to it.
That's why we need to go.
I'll just bring a book bag full of throwing stars.
You are the Fey Lord.
Oh yeah, that's what I also have that going for me too. I'll have an entire Fey army at my command. So if there's some creepy ass cave monsters that think they're going to take me and Steve, we are not going to go quietly.
Uh-uh. If you don't know what we're talking about, you need to check out The Night Shift.
Yeah.
Kyle's been dubbed a Fey Lord. So
I mean, I'm okay with it. I'm actually more than okay with it. I'm excited about it.
I am all here for it.
Same.
So anyway, they get back on the road, finally make it to Devil's Den, start scouting out a campsite. They keep trekking further and further into the park. They drove past the actual campsite and they're like, "Well, we're here. We want to see some nature." So they just keep trekking down the road. The blacktop road turns to gravel. Gravel road turns to dirt. Eventually they find a logging road that's completely blocked off with a cable. Obviously it says no entry. Arkansas Department of Park and Recreations. Toby being Toby, obviously from the UFO silo encounter where he was told by Superior Command not to get out, did it anyway. Toby goes up, checks the cable. Oh, it's not locked. Weird. Wonder what happens if this cable is not here anymore. Drops the cable to the ground. Just being Toby.
I never saw it.
Classic Toby. So they kind of knew they were trespassing, but they also knew that they weren't there to do any harm. They weren't there to tear shit up. They just wanted to find a good spot to go camping. They just kind of took on, you know, what's the worst that could happen? Being kicked out of the park, piss off some park rangers, get abducted by aliens. A little foreshadowing there. They continued on their trek quite a ways up a small bluff, kind of right off the edge of a forest. They're like, this is pretty nice. There's a big open meadow here. Got trees on one side, bluff on the other side. Like this is pretty dope. So they decide that's going to be their spot. Before they get ready to set everything up, they're going to just kind of scope it out, hike some trails that they see along the way and kind of feel how it's going. So they grab some water and take off. They'd hiked for about 3 miles when the fatigue from the drive and hike began to set in. Terry had mentioned to Toby that he wanted to find a spot to just sit down and like take a breather and eat some snacks, just kind of recharge. So they found this limestone overhang and they kind of sit back. And as they're sitting there, they're just enjoying the view, chatting about life, you know, chatting about how beautiful the scenery is, talking about their old ladies, just, you know, dude stuff. All of a sudden, Terry said he started to feel drowsy, not like fatigue tired, but almost like he was being put to sleep. And he's like, "The last thing I remember is Toby saying, 'Man, this is nice.'" And then all of a sudden he was woken up by Toby in a complete panic. Toby was yelling at him to wake up. He starts to open his eyes and it's almost dark. They had been out for 4 hours. They'd fallen
asleep. Both of them passed out?
Both of them were out.
Dude, that fucking sucks. And it reminds me, like we were just talking about it, how in a lot of these cases, people just go right back to bed. Like they just get so tired, they just zap right back out.
Yeah, they actually, the OSI, when they're investigating it, there's a name for it. And it's alien apathy and alien amnesia. So,
oh, wow. I didn't know there was a term. It's weird that it's extremely weird because we just talked about it. And I remember making the comment, I don't feel like enough people talk about this.
Yep.
And this is literally the first time that I've ever heard those references before.
Yeah. They call it alien apathy, where you get to a point, you're just like, doesn't matter. It's fine. Just go back to bed. Which is terrible. Terrifying. So they're woken up in a complete panic because they're in the middle of a nature preserve. Don't know where the hell they're at. It's getting dark. They don't have flashlights because they didn't plan on being out for that long. So Toby's freaking out. He starts beelining it down the trail, trying to figure out where he's going. Terry's still waking up, trying to get his bearings. And he immediately starts like worrying that they're going to get separated.
Well, yeah, because you got an idiot busting ass down the fucking hill. Yeah. You don't do that. You don't leave a man behind like that. What are you thinking?
Yep. So finally,
not to mention, that's how everybody dies in horror movies.
Everybody disappears this way.
It's the stupidest plan.
Yeah. Finally, Terry, having cooler head, got Toby, was like, hey, chill. It's fine. It's fine. We're going to figure it out. We're going to get back. And that's exactly what they did. Made it back to camp before darkness fully set in. They managed to get their tents set up, their air mattresses set up, built a little fire, just doing camping stuff, roasting some hot dogs, and just soaking in the forest, listening to forest sounds and talking. As the fire's starting to die down, they're just sitting there and looking at the night sky, just watching the stars. You know, there's been so much time on the military base. You don't get to see a whole lot. You're out here now where there's no light pollution or anything. And it's nice. You know, it's nice to get out and be able to see things that you haven't before. So they were really taking it in. And that's when Terry starts to notice something. There's no forest noises. It's completely silent. No crickets, no frogs, no nothing. Just silence.
It's not a good sign.
No. And as he's sitting there watching the stars, that feeling starts to come back over him. That like he's being put to sleep. That weird drowsiness is starting to creep back in.
Twofer?
Yeah.
Dude, that sucks.
Sucks. But that was all broken when suddenly Toby goes, were those there a few minutes ago? And points off like to the west horizon. And as he looks over there, there's three super bright stars that form a perfect triangle, kind of off to the west where the sun had went down earlier. Toby looks at him and he goes, I don't think those are stars. So when Terry looked, he saw three stars that were each equidistant apart from one another. They sat stationary in the night sky. They were all identical and they twinkled, almost mimicking other stars in the sky. As Terry's looking at it, he goes, I agree. Those are not stars. There are no aircraft lights set up in a configuration. So like in that specific configuration. So what exactly are we looking at? Toby goes, man, those are not aircraft. They're just sitting there. They're awfully damn bright too. And I don't think there's an airfield around here. So almost like clockwork, as this thing captured both men's attention, it started moving. The whole thing started rotating as if it was on an axis, almost confirming like, we aren't what you think we are.
Yeah, that gives me goosebumps terribly. Like my whole body has goosebumps right now.
Yeah.
Because I'm thinking about being in that situation and how fucking downright scary that would be. Like you said, it really fucks with you because A, you notice it. But what makes it worse is that it acknowledges you noticing it and goes, watch this.
Yeah.
And that's when you go, oh, no.
The fact that he says it like it was almost waiting for them to both see it before it decided to be like, hey,
it's even a crazier thought that two men in the military are out there and they see it. They see those lights. And the fact that one of them goes, I don't think those are stars. That, like, I know it's subtle, but you have to think about how uncommon that statement would be in that situation. Yeah. You know what I mean? Cause that'd be the last, outside of people like us, that would be the last thing on your mind is that it's a fucking UFO off in the sky.
Yeah.
you're just going to register it as something else. And I say it because the military, because they're familiar with flight systems and stuff. So the fact that like anything outside of STARS registered is kind of weird to me.
That's exactly. Cause that's the first thing they said, like, that's not a light pattern of any, like any of our aircraft, you know?
And they both clearly observed it stationary.
Yeah.
With no noise or anything. I mean, I don't know. It's just kind of a bizarre thought, like how he was just like, I don't think that's STARS out there.
Yeah. It's creepy. Gets creepier in the context later on when Terry's starting to put the pieces together is how everything kind of planned itself out. Anyway, they're looking at this thing, this triangle of STARS, and it starts to rotate perfectly as if it's on an axis. Said they move simultaneous and perfect harmony as if they were connected to one another. At this point, they're still kind of in their brain that these were through, like, before it started moving, they're like, maybe it is three STARS, but then started moving. So like, maybe it's three aircraft, you know, three drones or whatever the hell it is. Probably not drones because it's 1977, but
right.
So they're sitting there and they're just watching this thing, wondering if it could be a single solid object, because it's so like, they don't have real good distance as to how far away it is. But if it is, it's a big, big object, big craft, right? So as they're watching this thing, it begins to move across the sky and the drowsiness starts to get worse. They managed to stay awake and continue watching the craft. It climbed in an altitude in the west horizon and then started traversing the night sky, seemingly closer toward them. At first, they thought it was outside of our atmosphere, but then as it began to close in closer to them, they realized that everything within the triangle of the craft was blocked out. So it was blocking out the stars behind it. So it was one solid craft, and this confirmed it. It moved through the sky until it was almost perfectly over their heads. Then it started to grow in size, or at least that's what it looked like, but it was actually descending. The three points of light were so bright that it lit up the meadow like there was a full moon. Terry,
I don't know why, but this just scares the shit out of me.
I think it's the context of being out in the middle of nowhere and being completely helpless. Even two military dudes, like trained for the shit, you're not trained for this.
Dude, I don't know. I'm just putting like you and me there, and I don't know if it's just the way you're portraying it through his words or whatever, but it's fucking terrifying.
Aliens.
Just it's not abrupt. It's like a slow, methodical circumstance. It's not like, you hear stories like, I look over and I see an ET standing there and then it disappears. And like, it's a slow, methodical process in like a perverse way too, of like putting you under. And I don't know. It's just really fucking creepy.
Yeah. Sucks.
Cause I also envision us being out there and thinking to myself, like, what would we do in that circumstance? Like, I would have half of mine to like alien robot it and just duct tape myself to a tree and hope that they don't figure out how to get me out of there.
I know one thing I don't know. I do give UFOs the finger, but hopefully we don't do what Toby did.
Oh God, don't tell me.
He does the rule number one when you see a UFO.
Oh no.
First off, I need to mention that at this point, as they're watching it come in again, Terry notices that the entire forest is silent. Nothing is making a sound. Toby, on the other hand, breaks the cardinal rule. Commits sin number one in alien abduction.
Oh, no, no.
He grabs his flashlight.
Son of a bitch.
And makes three quick flashes to the UFO to see if it gets a response. It did. As soon as the third flash hit the craft, instantly a beam of white light about the size of a softball shot down directly dead on their campfire. Boom. At that point, it was about 8 feet from the men. Terry recalled it almost having like a high-powered searchlight or spotlight kind of feel to it. It didn't ascend as if there, it didn't ascend. It was almost as if someone had switched on a light or on a light switch. Just boom, there it was. It came directly from the center of this triangle and it lasted about 30 seconds and then poof, it was gone. Almost like, we see you now. Now you fucked up.
This forever will be one of the grossest stories I've heard.
A few minutes later.
I don't know why it's bothering me so much, but it's really bothering me.
Yeah,
it's really weird how much this story is bothering me because we've covered a fuckload of alien stories. And the only one, other one that's like giving me weird creeps like this is when I was writing out the Bledsoe case.
I creeped myself out writing this.
I bet.
The house by myself, staying up, like I work night. So I do a lot of my research and writing at night. And normally I'm cool. Writing about this, I just got the heebs.
Dude, you're talking to me about it. I've got the heebs. And also real quick, how crazy is it that, like, why do you think in this case, and it's in a lot of cases, it's not just this in particular, but we can bring up different equations for other elements, like people who have kind of like slipped dimensions in the woods and so on and so forth. But why do you think, because it's really confusing to me, why this craft is so far off and yet already the environment is reacting to it by going silent? Because we know that in most cases, when the environment goes dead quiet, there's a predator in the area. And it's crazy to me. Like, is that a reality? Is the creatures of Mother Nature, are they registering this as a predator and have the ability to sense it that far away? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, that was,
there's aspects of that equation that are very interesting. And it's hard to explain all in one setting, but it's really bizarre how much, like, how something so simple as everything goes quiet, this craft has an effect on that. And I want to understand why that happens.
That was my initial, like, thought pattern too. Maybe they're assuming it is like a predator, but then also I think it's beyond that. I think they are probably controlling the reality that has taken place right there. They don't want anything to distract them, to snap them out of this, like, this controlled apathy that they're in. You know, if he can focus on like the crickets or something, it may pull him out of whatever they're planning on holding.
So that brings me to two questions then. What if it's not them actually manipulating reality? What if it's them manipulating your perception of reality?
Oh yeah.
Like, they're fucking your brain. Like, the noises are actually still there. It's just your brain is so fucked by them that you're not registering anything.
I think that's probably closer.
Or if they are actually manipulating reality, maybe that is one avenue of how our government is able to intercept these objects. Because you would think by them being able to manipulate reality, it would create some type of distortion that could possibly be measured by something the military would have.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, they would, like, the military would somehow know it. It's like if an earthquake were to go off, we have sensors out there that are able to catch that. Well, what if their distorting of our reality, we have sensors to catch that? Because you do hear of cases where the military is able to predict where these things are, figure out where they are, so on and so forth. How do we do that?
Yep. Like, it's almost like the lead mask case where they were dealing with, they created something that could either predict where they were going to be or summon these things in, which there's probably a lot of truth to that.
Yeah. And furthermore, how many times have we heard of abductees getting paid a visit by the government afterwards?
Oh yeah.
That's, which means the government clearly had knowledge of the account. It just, you know,
yep,
something would have had to ping to the government this took place, or they're in cahoots with it, one or the other. Yeah. But you know what I mean? Like, so maybe there's two plausibilities there, and I'd be interested. It's a shame we're not actually experts and have fucking answers to these questions.
It's a shame we can't contact someone to tell us if this is accurate. Yeah. Okay, so the diameter white light, after 30 seconds, poof, gone. They're just sitting there watching the craft. And then what Terry said felt like a few minutes later, another beam struck the campsite. It was blue this time, and it was thin, about the diameter of a pencil, looked like a laser pointer. It darted around the campsite, but they never saw it actually move. It was like someone was turning it on and turning it off. Right? Terry said it would just flash in and out of existence, and it would hit the men multiple times, land on their chest, land on their heads. It was almost acknowledging that they were there.
In my last episode, remember there was the old man that saw those aliens with their different colored lights?
Yeah.
And described the same way, like little laser pointer style.
Yep.
That's weird. It's the second time now that I've heard about this.
It is weird. I didn't make that.
It is weird.
After about 2 minutes, this beam also abruptly stopped. And Terry said this is when the sedation hit, like, boom, just hard. They were super tired. Still underneath, mind you, this massive triangle craft, Toby looks at Terry and says, "Show's over." And said almost robotically, the two men grabbed their air mattresses, went into their tent. So they fell asleep almost immediately. Again, Terry calls it almost like a controlled apathy. Said almost every aspect of what was happening made them so comfortable that they wanted to fall asleep. They said the temperature, the noise, everything made it to where they just wanted to go to bed.
Dude, fuck that. I'm sorry. If you look at me and say something like "show's over," I'm going to punch you in the mouth.
I hope you do.
I hope I do too. And on top of that, like, I think another reason this story scares me so much, especially right what you just did, is how, and I guarantee everyone has experienced this, but how many times have you been, whether it's a bad dream or you think you hear something or whatever the case may be, you wake up in the middle of the night, you're terrified. And then without explanation, it's like your eyes are so heavy. We've all been there. Yep. You cannot help but to go right back to sleep. Yep. And that creeps me out so much. That's what he's describing in this case. And I know for a fact we've all been there.
Yeah. The conditions are so perfect for you to be tired and just sleep. Like, it's controlled. That's what he said. It's a controlled apathy. Like, we are seeing something we should not be seeing. We're seeing something that should not be, that should not exist. And we don't care enough to just time to go to bed. Just go back to sleep.
And that's you hear that in a lot of cases.
Yeah. So that's what they did. They immediately went in, fell asleep. Terry then was awoken hours later by a bright green and yellow light emanating through the tent. He could see it. The tent's lit up. He said there was a weird low bass hum too that he couldn't explain. Almost like it was like a generator, almost some kind of power source. He didn't know what the hell was going on. He didn't know if it was park rangers, if it was poachers, other campers just snooping around. But as he started to focus on the light, he began to pull himself to his knees. That's when he realized every bone in his body ached. He was just sore, completely sore. And he knew, like, he thought, man, we went on a pretty good hike, but they're both in good shape. Like, they're military guys, they're runners. Like, it's a whole thing. He said he also could remember that he instantly felt thirsty. He was just absolutely parched. And as he's watching these lights, this unexplained fear just started coursing through his body. Like something was there that wanted to hurt him. He couldn't explain like what was going on. He was still trying to wake up. He remembered that when he climbed into the tent, he thought enough in his head that he didn't want to take his boots off. He left his boots tied on tight because there was still some part of his brain that said, something isn't right. If I need to get out of here, I'm going to keep my boots on.
Good thinking.
Keep that in mind. So that's when he's kind of getting his bearings about him. He notices Toby. Toby's laying down flat in the tent with his head stuck out through the flap, looking out into the meadow.
That's awesome.
Yes. Yeah. He's just completely immersed by whatever's happening outside, and Terry hears him muttering to himself, just talking, real quiet under his breath, like whispering. The lights outside start changing colors now. They're multicolored, and the low hum still going on. Again, he's trying to make sense of everything in his brain. Park rangers maybe found their site. You know, they were snooping about. They're like, they're getting ready to get kicked out. So Terry grabs a flashlight and he goes to turn it on. But right before he turns it on, Toby out of nowhere reaches up and grabs his hand. Boom. Turns and looks Terry dead in his eyes and says, "Be quiet. They're still out there." And Terry's like, "Who's still out there?
Fuck that.
What the fuck?"
Feels like some old Vietnam flashback.
Dude. And he said he saw that Toby was shivering like it was frigid cold weather, but it was the middle of the summer. And he also saw that Toby was trying to catch his breath, like he was out of breath. And in, as Terry's like looking at him, it starts to come to his senses as he's looking at Toby. You know, Toby's looking him dead in his eyes. He realized that Toby wasn't muttering to himself. He had been crying. Whatever he saw the tent had scared him so bad that he was sobbing.
You know what? Fucking hats. I stand tall for you, Toby, because you're a real one, dude. You were still on post. Your homie was down. He was out. And as bad as it fucking scared you, you looked essentially death in its eyes and stared right back at it.
That, like, just thinking that, like, that gave me goosebumps, that whole scenario where he's like, "I realized Toby was crying."
Yeah.
And I'm like, fuck, like, this is, like, he goes on to say, he said the flashes of the light that was coming from outside, he could see the tear stains down Toby's cheeks, or it had been going on for a while. And he's like, Toby's an Air Force guy. He's a first responder. Like, he is trusted to keep his cool in the worst of the worst scenarios. And something out in that meadow has just broken him down to tears. That sucks.
That's fucked up. That's scary.
Yeah. He said Toby kept trying to shush him as Terry was asking more questions. "Toby, what's wrong? What is it? Are there park rangers outside?" Toby just kept going, "No, no, no." This is where Terry just froze in his tracks because he started to hear footsteps outside of the tent.
Oh no.
He also began to notice shadows cast across the tent from the light source that was outside.
Nope.
He said from what he could see inside, they were humans. He estimated them to be about a dozen of them, and they were moving between the tent and the light source.
He thought
we're fucked. You know, the park rangers are out here.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah. Because in his mind, he's like, we're busted, you know?
There's fucking 12 of them out there. That's no small number.
Yeah. So since Toby's kind of still in this state of just like utter shock, Terry builds up some courage and took it upon himself to look out at the tent. So he pushes Toby's shoulder over and pulls the flap. And that's when he sees it. He said it isn't a flying saucer as like you think in science fiction magazines. This thing was much larger, something he wasn't prepared to see. It took up every inch of the large meadow that they were in. Somehow he immediately knew that it was the thing that they were watching from the night before when they fell asleep. Terry said, quote, "It was now hovering 30 feet above the meadow. We could see two sides clearly. There were randomly dispersed square panels of light on each side. It reminded me of a 5-story office building at night, with offices lit here and there on every side. Along the very top row was a larger row of windows that slanted outward. They were all lit. I saw faint shadows and movement behind the larger panels. These larger panels were stretched the entire length of the two sides of the triangle that we could see. The points of light had dimmed, and they were now flashing. They were changing colors as well, from greens to yellows to orange, along with this droning sound. These were the same lights that woke me up. I still remember the forest being completely silent except for this low droning sound. It was loud, but it wasn't. It like the whatever frequency was on, like they could feel it. He could feel it just reverberating in his chest. So Toby then leans over to look back out the tent to I guess put eyes back on whatever was going on. So as Terry's looking out, it still hasn't like registered what the fuck is going on. So Terry's looking, Toby's looking, Terry sees what he thinks are children milling about underneath the craft. He said there's about a dozen of them in groups of twos and threes moving about, all about the same height, maybe 3.5 feet tall. He's still trying to rationalize this in his brain. He's like, how could someone have their kids out here in the middle, like in the early morning, in the middle of the damn forest, underneath a UFO? So he's like whispering, he goes, Toby, what the hell are these children doing underneath this giant thing in the middle of the night? Toby just looks at him like he's crazy. And he goes, Terry, those aren't little kids. They aren't human beings. They took you too. They hurt us both. They hurt us bad. And then he just started just sobbing again.
That fucking sucks, because that means homeboy like wasn't out for all of it.
No, he was remembering things Terry was not remembering.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Oh man. Shivers.
It sucks.
It's gotta be the worst feeling ever.
Just,
it has to be
completely out of control.
Yeah. Like, and this right now, Terry's lucky, you know, because poor Toby, basically, as far as I know right now, he was awake for the entire thing.
Yeah.
And he's already saying how bad they hurt him.
Yeah. Yep. So once that I think that kind of flips a light in Terry's brain. So he starts like trying to memorize what's happening. He tries to start making notes of it, mental notes. He said the size of the craft alone obviously made it a considerable threat. It was the same black matte finish as the diamond they'd seen in the missile silo encounter. Each corner had an immensely bright light that could be easily mistaken for stars. The exterior was seamless. No rivets, no bolts, no nothing. Noticing a noise as he's sitting there like taking in the craft, he hears a noise at the back of the tent where the little screen sits out. So he turns to look at it. That's when he sees more shadows behind the tent. So they're considerably outnumbered now.
Oh, dude, I'm throwing fucking heaters.
It's considerably outnumbered.
I ain't ever going out into a situation like that without some iron on my hip, yeah. Right? And I'm not playing at all, dude. You tell me they fucked us up and they fucked us up bad. Well, we're about to get some get back, especially because at that point, my brain is going to calculate we don't even have the option for flight because we're surrounded now. Yeah. We have them at the back. We got them at the front. We're insanely outnumbered.
That's exactly what he said. He said, at this point, I realized how truly terrified I am. And he said, under no circumstances am I leaving this tent. So he knows we're in some shit.
I'm just going to be like, Steve, it's time to.
Right.
WWBW, homie. WWBWD. What would Bruce Willis do?
Yeah.
And we got to go out in a blaze of glory.
Sucks.
Balls to the wall, man.
It sucks.
Turn them GoPros on, hit the hammers back, and let the shit fly.
Yeah. So he knows like they're not only like they're surrounded at this point, surrounded by whatever these things are. The things that he thought were kids that Toby just told him are not human. So the light at the front of the tent changes and draws his attention back that direction. As he looks out, he sees a massive light beam shoot from the center of the craft. It's a perfectly round cylinder of light. He said it looked to be about 30 feet in diameter. Suddenly, all these beings started moving toward it, stepping into the light. As soon as they did, it was almost as if they dissolved into it. Right back up. After the last one stepped into the beam, the light flashed out. The corner lights that they had seen that they thought were stars that were now emanating different colors all immediately turned back to white and got as bright as the sun. Said it looked like the whole meadow. It looked like it was noon in the meadow. It was completely illuminating it. The hum stopped, and Terry says the craft started to move silently, almost raising as if it were a hot air balloon. He said it rotated a half a turn counterclockwise, wobbled slightly, and then shot off into the sky, just gone. So as he's sitting there, seeing that beam of light started to like unlock some vague memories of what had happened while they were out. He said, I quote, I could see scant color images. I could recall a whirring noise and a sense of motion. Then a flash of bright light, and suddenly we were inside the spacecraft. We were sucked into the thing, just like the little creatures were that we watched dissolve into the light. I remember being awestruck by the volume of the interior. Everything was either white or stainless steel. The structure was brilliantly lit inside. The ceiling and wall panels emitted light. I was astounded to see three flying saucers parked inside. They were aligned in a neat row on the far side. We could see walkways and different levels. I recalled there were support structures and unrecognizable symbols etched into the walls. What he mentions next kind of takes a more sinister undertone. Quote, we were not alone. Inside, we saw 50 to 60 other people. Afterward, I'd wondered who they were and what happened to them. Did they leave with the machine? Were they even still alive? I know that I was fortunate to be alive. Toby and I made it back, but I'm not sure those poor souls ever made it home. I sure as hell wouldn't change places with them. So it was at this point they decided to make a run for the truck. They see this thing take off. They're like, fuck it. We are out of here.
I'm with that.
They are out of here. That's when Terry looks down and notices his boots that were tightly laced when he fell asleep were now unlaced all the way down. And he could feel that his socks were fucked up in his boots. So he slipped his boot off and his socks are all twisted and inside out. So he's like, that's not how I left them. That's not
good. Yeah.
So he laces his boots up and they just abandon the campsite. Fuck it. We are gone. They left all their gear behind and just got in the truck, shot out of the park. They're like, we don't care. We need to get out of there. They remember, again, being horribly thirsty. Just like every ounce of liquid had been drained from their bodies. And Terry remembers being so sore. As they're driving, the sun starts to come up and Terry remembers how badly his eyes hurt with the light coming up from the sun. He looks at Toby, who has kind of laid down in the back seat at this point, and he says, Toby's eyes are almost completely swollen shut. Like he had the shit beat out of him. And Toby's getting to the point now to where he's like begging for them to stop and get a drink. Any like, I need something. They looked through the car. They didn't have anything. They left everything back at the campsite. So finally they start seeing signs for a little gas station. They pull in and go in to get some beers. And he says, I remember going into this little like podunk gas station. He's like, it's as stereotypical as you can, like a backwoods gas station. He said the old man that worked there had overalls on and just as plain as can be. And he said, as I walked in to get the restroom key, he said, I also had to piss so bad. So I walked in to get the restroom key. He's like, the old man looked at me like I was carrying a severed head. And he goes, what did you get into? And Terry hadn't noticed anything at this point. And he goes, what do you mean? And the old man's like, you look rough, kid. So he's like, yeah, I know. So he buys a six pack of beer and he asks it for the restroom key and the old man hands it to him. So he bags his beer up, leaves it on the counter, goes in to take a piss. And he says, as he goes in, there is a mirror. And as he sees it, he says his eyes are almost as swollen as Toby's are. said Toby's in worse shape from what he could see, but it looked like him and Toby have been in a bar fight. His eyes are almost swollen completely shut. He said his whole skin, his face looked like it had been completely sunburnt. So he's like, what in the hell is going on? At that point, he takes his shirt off and it's his whole body is just beet red sunburned. There's no tan lines, no clothing marks, like whatever had scorched him, he had been completely nude for. So he's like, okay, what the fuck just happened? He also notices these weird, he thought they were insect bites, but these weird boils all over his body. Just head to toe covered in these things. He couldn't remember what had happened to him, but as he's sitting there looking in the mirror, like these weird vague flashes keep pulsating through his mind. He said they were like photos under a strobe light. He said they were horrific images, muffled noises, weird audios. He's like, the only thing that I knew 100% was that I could hear Toby screaming when I was thinking about these things in my brain. I could just hear him screaming. As he comes out of the bathroom, Toby's standing there ready to go in next. And he said Toby looked like he was minutes away from death. He said it was awful. So Toby's going in there using the restroom. He goes back to get the beer and the old man's like, you guys need to call someone. Like, you can use my phone if you need to get where you're going. He's like, I don't know what you kids got into in the woods, but like, it's bad. It's bad, bad. He's like, no, I'm fine. Cause he's running through his mind. Like, what am I going to tell anyone? You know, what am I going to tell my wife? Like, we got abducted by aliens, you know, nobody's going to believe it. So Toby's in the bathroom. He starts to think about like everything that kind of went on, and it's all starting to like tick boxes in his brain. Because keep in mind, Terry had incidents from when he was a younger kid. So he immediately starts to wonder if maybe Toby had encountered these beings again when he was young. And it starts to tick in Terry's brain. Maybe this whole thing was a setup. Why was Toby so adamant about them going to Devil's Den when they could have stayed at any park?
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains June 13th through the 23rd. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
You know, why did they go past the campsite where they were initially planning to stay? What led them to that exact meadow? Why did they go for the hike to where they passed out on the limestone rocks for 4 hours? Almost like all of this was very strategically planned from the get-go. So he's like, man, what in the fuck even happened? So Toby comes out, gets the beer. They immediately start chugging them and they start going to drive home. Like, obviously it's the 70s. You don't want to be too inebriated as you're driving, but it wasn't like as big of a deal as it is now.
Right.
So he said he tries to make small talk with Toby, but Toby's not having any part of it. He's like, something has changed in Toby, obviously. And as they're driving, they just sit in silence. He even looks over at Toby and he's got his eyes closed. He's like, I half thought Toby was faking being asleep so we didn't have to talk about what happened. He says, which I understand. He drops Toby off, says there's no small talk, no goodbyes. He just pulls into Toby's driveway. Toby gets out, walks inside. I drive home. I get home. He says, Terry gets home. And he says his wife meets him at the door because he's a day early. And she says she looks at him in just utter shock. She's like, what has happened to you? And he's like, I don't know. He's like, we got into something. I don't know if it's bug bites or what it is. He's like, it's bad. She's like, oh my God, is Toby okay? And he's like, Toby's in worse shape. So she immediately takes his temperature and it's 104 degrees.
Oh, dang.
So she runs some cold bath water. puts some ice in there, starts to ice him down, and he's in there for 10 or 15 minutes. She takes his temperature again. It's 102. She's like, we got to get you to the emergency room. Immediately take him to the emergency room where they're looking at him. They're like, what in the fuck happened to you? Get him into a room and they start to check him over head to toe, doing the whole nine, taking his blood work, checking everything out. And they start to take pictures of his whole body. They start to count each burn, each blister. And there's 124 of them. He said, this is where it gets weird. He said, new doctors come in and he's like, I work on a nuclear testing facility. Obviously, he says, they bring out a Geiger counter, start running it over my body. He's like, I immediately know that it's burping yellow positive. Dump, 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 dump. Like at this point, one of the old head doctors gives my wife a biohazard bag. And was like, you need to go home and you need to bag up everything from wherever he came from, his clothes, anything that he had, car keys, flashlight, anything. You need to put them in these bags and you need to bring them here where we can contain them, because obviously he's been into some shit. So he's there for a couple days and wife brings back the bag. The only thing that they diagnose him with at this point is dehydration. Testing positive for radioactive material, but they mark him down for dehydration.
That's weird.
So as he's sitting there in his recovery on the second day, his commanding officer comes in and is like, man, what, like, cause everybody knew that they were going camping. They had planned it. Everybody on the base had been talking about it. So commanding officer comes in and is like, what did you guys get into? You know, he's like, there's a lot of talk around the base that you guys got fucked up pretty bad. And he says, we'll cover your shift. You guys just heal up. It's going to be fine. Like, and then he'd mentioned, like, we're excited to see the pictures that you took. And Terry thought that was a little odd. But not long after his commanding officer went out, two men came in. He didn't recognize them. And they introduced themselves as being Air Force Office Special Investigations, the OSI. Basically, it's what JAG is to the Navy, right? And these guys are no nonsense. Introduced themselves. Like, we need to talk to you about what's went on. We've already talked to Toby. We need to talk to you. They pull out a tape recorder, set it on his little food tray. And they read him the rights of Uniform Code of Military Justice. And they just start drilling him about everything. Why'd you guys choose to go to Devil's Den? Why didn't you stay in the actual campground? Why did you guys trespass on federal land at the nature preserve? And this is still within probably 24 to 48 hours. The park rangers had already found their campsite back on this abandoned logging road, and they found their property of U.S. Air Force blankets. They found their military grade bug spray. They found their military grade sunscreen, already all linked back to them. So much so that the OSI guys had already been noted and are now there, just grilling them about everything.
Because that's none of that suspect at all.
No,
mind right? You.
Not like that. Like that. Almost like you said. Like that. Maybe they already knew.
I kind of feel like they definitely at least know, they knew something took place there that night.
Yeah. They pull out a whole stack of papers and Terry's eyes are still swollen shut. Like he's trying to talk to them. He's like, can we talk about this later? I'm super exhausted. And they're like, no, we need to talk to you about this, why it's fresh in your brain. And pull out this big stack of papers. He's like, I couldn't even read it. He's like, I just signed it. And what it was consent for them to search his car, search his house, just do a full head to toe, everything, go through everything that he may have brought back, everything that he may have searched up, anything that he may have gotten from that encounter. So again, they're drilling him hard. You know, we could go on federal trespassing, yada, yada, yada. They go and seize maps from his glove compartment of his car. They immediately start asking him, we need you to draw exactly where you and Toby stayed, which he thought was weird because the park rangers had found the campsite. Like, they literally left their shit there. And just keep drilling him. Like the thing that they were most focused on was the supposed camera, right? Did you get any pictures? Did you get any pictures? We heard you had a camera. We heard that that's the reason you were going out to Devil's Den to take pictures. We need the film. We need the camera. And Terry's adamant. Like, I forgot the film. I forgot it. I don't know what to tell you. Like, we don't believe you. I forgot it. We don't believe you. They sent a guy to the house, searched the house, found the camera. All it had was a no exposure roll of film on it. So they bring it back. And they're like, there's no pictures on here. There's not. And this OSI official was just constantly like, we know you got pictures of something. So you.
That's so weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause the whole thing is just like ultra suspect. It makes me feel like, because you got to wonder, the craft itself has notoriously been outed as the TR-3B, which supposedly could be experimental human tech, but it doesn't ring for the little grays that are inside, unless the TR-3B that's been exposed to us was one of these donations and we just so happened to reverse engineer it.
Yeah.
But I feel like the military knew something was in the area, and it's kind of got me in a weird space. It makes me feel like the military is in panic mode and they're wanting to try to recover something from this encounter. Like, they knew the encounter took place. The encounter itself is beyond their control, but they're trying to gain access to something, whether to maybe make themselves feel better, like they're in control of the situation. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, they're treating it like a terrorist attack or something to that degree.
And it's almost like they're trying to break them down. How much do you know about what you know?
Right.
Like, we need to know what you know. So as they're still grilling him, and he's just adamant, like, I didn't take any pictures. You know, we just went out there to camp. He's like, we saw some strange lights in the sky. And this story matched up with Toby's. And all the while, this nurse keeps checking back in. Like they're adamant about trying to get some painkillers in him. And finally she steps in and is like, you do not have a choice. We are going to administer him the medication that he needs. You can talk to him as is with the medication or not. She's like, if you need to talk to my doctor, talk to him. He's like, but we are administering him his medication. At this point, they relented and were like, no, we're done. And that's when they tell Terry that he is being reassigned from his duties at Whiteman. He will stay at Whiteman, but he will not be doing what he was doing. Toby is being reassigned to another base.
Oh, fuck that. Oh, says, I was just thinking the whole time, like whenever they separated after their encounter, I don't know in those moments that if it happened to you and me, I'd want to separate from you.
Yep.
I feel like I would want to, I don't care if you came to my house and stayed, for some reason, something would draw me to stay close to you. Probably because it's a shared trauma and we could hash it out together, yeah. You know? And there's comfort in that between us.
Yep.
Cause I would feel, I just feel like I would feel less safe if you were at your house and I was at my house for some reason.
Oh yeah.
And then them separating us from bases would fucking enrage me.
And especially like almost like now you have two different enemies. Like you have whatever the entities were that abducted you. And now you have the OSI and the government also trying to make it worse.
Yeah.
So Toby's being assigned to another base. They tell Terry, you cannot leave the base without permission from us or your commanding officer. You do not speak on the incident to anyone. You do not speak to Toby or his family. This is quote from Terry that's from the officer. says, you will not speak to senior airman Tobias or his family. You will not communicate with them in any way. That means no notes, no letters. You will not discuss this incident with anyone at your new duty station or disclose the reason for your reassignment. Do not attempt to contact Tobias by a third party either. That means your wife or anyone else. You will not talk about the lights you saw in the sky that night. Not to anyone. Not to your wife. Not to your priest. Not to your mother. No one. Do you understand me?
All right, hotshot.
Yeah. And then Terry was like, yes, sir. And he said, after I kind of gave him that consent, his guard changed real weird. He just said, you knuckleheads stumbled onto something that made you very sick. And I think you know what I mean. Then the OSI said,
you can fucking get bent, yeah, bud. How about that?
The OSI takes off and he just remembered, like, man, that was so strange of an interaction, like treating us like we'd done something so wrong when we're here in this state, like almost being dead. You know, whatever we got into was so bad. So as it kind of trickles down the line, it's written off that they stumbled upon an undocumented uranium deposit.
Oh, yeah.
And they camped on top of it. That's why all these physical ailments happened to them.
Mm-hmm.
So Terry's wife, Sheila, calls him and is like, I just got off the phone with Toby's wife. They're being relocated. They don't know what base they're going to. It's out of state. He said, they also informed us that we are not to talk to one another again, which they were close. You know, they were all buddies. And that was that. So Terry gets out of the hospital after a little while. And he's really bummed that he lost his position at Whiteman. You know, he loved being an EMT. He loved doing those things. He said now everybody at the base treated him weird. His first assignment, he was put off into this old garage. And his commanding officer said, even his commanding officer, who was a good guy, his whole demeanor changed. Like, he's like, here's what you're going to be doing today, Terry. And there was a bunch of sheets of plywood. He's like, I need you to spray paint these silver. He's like, I want you to do the best job you could ever do on them. You know, just make them pristine. He said there was probably 8 to 12 sheets of 4x8 foot sheets of plywood. He's like, so I went out there and I did the best job that I could. You know, I didn't know what he was using them for, but I wanted it to be good. Like, I take pride in my work. He said, after I finished it, took me about 8 hours. It's like, I went back to my CO and I said, hey, I got it done for you. Like, do you have anything, like, can my next assignment be something like a little more pressing, like something I can use my brain on, you know? And he's like, oh yeah, I got you. He's like, I need you to sand down all of those pieces of plywood you just painted. He said, there's sandpaper on the desk. So almost like he's being punished for what's went on. He said, it's
weird because it's like, the whole base is in on it too.
Trying to,
like,
break him down almost. Trying to,
yeah. Yeah. It's weird. So, like, it makes you wonder if, in order to keep this story covered, they gave the base some generic infraction that him and Toby did to make the rest of the guys, like,
yeah,
almost have a vendetta for him. Like, you fucked up, you idiot. Yep. God, how could you do that?
Yep. That's kind of what I was thinking too. So he said, I would just go in there every day on my shift and I would sanded all these pieces of plywood that I just painted. He said, I kind of found solace in it. That was like, that little garage was like my workshop, you know? And he talks about one day, after him and his wife went to go get groceries, they were driving home. It had probably been 2 weeks after the encounter. He said on their way home, they were driving by Toby's house. He didn't think, like, they didn't do it on purpose. It was just the quickest route home from the grocery store. And as they're driving by, they see the moving truck out in front of Toby's house. So he's begging his wife to stop. He's got to talk to him. So his wife stops about 3-4 blocks away. Lets Terry out. Terry goes to the house. And as he's walking in, he sees Toby's wife. She just blows him off. Like, you could tell she's angry with him, almost like she's blaming him for them being relocated. And she's like, you're not supposed to be here. He's like, I just need to talk to Toby. As he goes in, Toby hears him talking back and forth. And he comes out of a back bedroom, says, tell he could be drinking. He'd been drinking. He looks terrible. And He's like, Terry, you're not supposed to be here. Terry's like, I know. He's like, I just needed to tell you goodbye. You know, like, we're best buds. It sucks. And he's like, Terry just looks at him, or Toby just looks at him and goes, tell me that you believe what happened to us happened to us. I need to know that you know what happened to us was real. And Terry's like, that just hit, like, oh shit, this is way worse than I thought it was. And that was the last contact that they had together. Terry walks out of the house, walks a few blocks down, gets into the car. Immediately, two squad cars are behind them, following them. Follow them all the way back to their house. And as they're walking in carrying the groceries, they can hear their phone ringing. So they get the house unlocked, goes in. Terry picks up the phone. It's one of the OSI special agents. By the time that they left from Toby's house to Terry's house, the OSI already knew. Like, you don't listen real well, do you? He's like, you're just itching. Said, you're itching to change uniforms, aren't you? And Terry's like, what are you talking about? He's like, from your military uniform to a prison uniform. Is that what you want? Because you're not listening very well. And he was like, I just wanted to tell Toby goodbye. Like, just chill out. He's like, you will follow the orders that I gave you from here on out, or the consequences are not going to be good. And it was just enough to kind of scare Terry into complying, you know?
I mean, I don't blame him, but I also would have been like, whatever, nerd.
Yeah, I had to fight aliens. Like, I'll fight you.
Fuck you, dude. Like, this is my dude. We just went through hell, and you're going to be a prick? Yeah, well, how about you come over here? Let's figure it out. How about that? Because fuck you.
So from there, Toby's gone. Terry's kind of just taken solace in his little workshop. That's what he dubbed it. His little garage is his workshop. And he's like, I would just go in there and just turn the radio on and sand on the paint. He's like, which was kind of nice because I was away from everyone. I wasn't getting like ridicule, weird looks. I could just go in there, do what they wanted me to do, and go home. He's like, 2 days later, I was sanding. My CO came in and he's like, the OSI need to interview you again. They have a car at the front gate. You need to go now. I would not pussyfoot around. You need to go. Terry goes, gets in the car, just takes off. They drive to the OSI part of, I guess it's on Whiteman. I'm not sure. Said it wasn't very far. When he gets there, he sees the two guys that interrogated him. There's another man there that he almost looks like a doctor or psychiatrist or something. And as he's sitting there, they start talking to him about what had happened. And they tell him that this man is here to do some hypnosis therapy. So Terry's like, that's kind of weird. And they're like, we just kind of want to get to the bottom of what happened. If you have any repressed memories, we'd like to know, because like, you guys were kind of vague on what had went down when we interviewed you. They says it's all 100% safe. Like, it's going to be fine. And Terry's like, well, I guess I really don't have an option, right? And badass OSI guy pulls out the stack of papers that Terry had signed when he was all fucked up. He's like, no, you don't actually. And points to his signature. So Terry's like, all right, I guess we'll do this. So they administer some sort of drug to him in a syringe. I guess it's maybe to help the hypnosis, which I thought is weird. It's almost like they're like pre-planning it, right? So this hypnosis guy starts to go in to what went on. They talk about getting to Devil's Den, going on the hike, all of this other stuff, and that obviously gets to the point of the actual abduction. As he's getting to that point, the hypnosis is kind of unlocking things in Terry's brain about past abductions that he had, like the ones where when he was a child. And he starts talking about how these entities would make him forget everything except for little snippets, right? There would be little reminders here and there that as he's sitting there, he's starting to make sense in his brain. Like, they were priming me to remember who they are for my adult abductions. He said he compared it to like the way an abuser will groom a child. Just priming them into like, this is okay. This is going to be okay. And he said it once that clicked in my head, it was so gross. Like this had been going on since I was a kid.
It's disturbing as fuck.
Yeah. And as they're there, they start talking about his past abductions. And he said that he had been on a ship once before that was larger than the ship in the meadow, which he said resided on the backside of the moon. And he said he remembered being up there, and he remembered he was talking to this who he thought was a woman, but she was basically like a hybrid. He said that this craft, this excessively large one, had to stay on the backside of the moon because if it moved between the moon and the earth, it was big enough to where they could, like, you could see it with the naked eye. But he said on the backside of the moon, there are cities and there are entities from outer space and humans that live on the backside of the moon of these cities. So he's just recounting all of these past abductions. And now we get brought back to the Devil's Den abduction. As he's there, he talks about the white walls and the panels and the stainless steel. And he goes in, he's like, there's a woman beside me and I recognize her, but I can't remember who she is. And he's like, I start seeing a ton of people, like 50 or 60 people standing there. He says, but I also see people that are crew members of the craft. They are humans. So the hypnosis guy asks him, well, what do they look like? He's like, they're all in tan uniforms and they have military insignia patches on their sleeves. And he said immediately he could feel the atmosphere in the room change. And the guy giving the hypnosis is like, you are going to forget about the people in the uniforms. And I'm like, what?
So now they're re-grooming him.
Yes. Yes, because he said you could hear an audible sigh from the OSI agents when he said they had military insignias on their sleeves. And you could hear just like, fuck, like we fucked up.
They remembered too much.
Yeah. So he's like, when this is over, you are going to forget about the men in the uniform. So they keep asking him about what else is going on. He says as they're walking us through the halls there, the panels change. And he said they're giant aquariums all the way down this corridor. He's like, I don't want to look at them. I don't want to look into the aquarium. And the hypnosis guy's like, you're going to look at them. These are all past memories. You can't be hurt. It's going to be fine. He says, as I look in, I see what look like embryos. He said, I thought that I didn't know what they were. He's like, but as I'm looking at them, they're very human-like, except that they have really big eyes. And he said, one of them starts to move and it startles the hell out of me. So he let out an audible scream looking at whatever these things are. He said, they're human, but they're not human. And they move on from the aquarium. And he says, all 50, 60 of us are standing in a line. And he says, the grays come in and they start undressing us, taking our clothes off. He said, some people already have their clothes off. They're standing there with their clothes perfectly folded in their arms, just like they don't know what is going on. But the grays are undressing the rest of us. He says, it's almost like we're waiting to go into this operating room. So there's a big stainless steel table. People go in. Then the next one goes in. Then the next one goes in. He said, when it's my turn to go in, he goes, I realize like an instilled fear hits me. I do not want to be in this room. I do not want to be in here. And he says, they force me onto the table and they're holding me down. And they ask, who's holding you down? He says, the grays. He says, they are incredibly strong for their size. He said, they're stronger than they should be. He's like, I don't feel like they're biological. He said, the outside's biological, but I almost feel like with their strength and their movements, almost like they're mechanical on the inside. He says there are other larger aliens there that are telling the grays what to do. And at this point, a third alien, an insectoid, essentially comes in and starts overseeing everything. He's over the tall ones, he's over the short ones, and he's communicating with Terry. And Terry's like, I am so terrified. He's like, I know what's going to happen. He's like, I've been here before. These exams are terrible. It's going to hurt. He says, equipment starts dropping from the ceiling. Knives, probes, all kinds of stuff. And this insectoid is communicating with him telepathically. And as they start to do these procedures, Terry's trying to scream because it's hurting so bad. And this, he says, it almost annoys the insectoid. Like, you know, and he says telepathically, he says, you know who we are. You're not going to remember any of this when you wake up. It's not going to hurt when you wake up. Why are you screaming?
Because it hurts now, yeah, asshole.
That's what he said. He's like, it's almost, he said they had complete apathy, lack of empathy for me being a human and what's going on to me right now. And he said just that alone, that they didn't care the amount of pain that they were inflicting, just made me know that they were not necessarily nefarious, just that they did not care. He said the total, it was absolute lack of empathy. Like, they were there doing a job, you know, trying to figure out, like, studying the biological specimens that are human beings. And he said they went through a whole big rigmarole of tests. And he said, as the hypnosis goes, he can still hear Toby screaming from another room. That's what's playing in his mind. He still hears Toby screaming. Like, Toby was trying to fight his way out of it.
Good on him.
And,
but that would haunt me.
Yeah. He said, after that, the next thing he remembers was they beamed us down, but they fucked up. They didn't put us in our tent. They set us closer to our car. And that somebody had made a mistake and somebody was going to pay for it, because immediately once we hit the ground, he's like, they beamed a bunch of grays down and they carried us into our tent. He's like, I remember being carried, can't move. Remember being carried in. And as soon as they got us aligned, like on our air mattresses and stuff, they all went about, I guess, whatever the fuck they were doing back out in the meadow. But he kind of goes on. I'm probably going to end it there. We're already way over with the hypnosis. Talks about the alien apathy and the alien amnesia, where when these encounters take place, they essentially get inside your brain to make you not care. Like, just make you tune out and then make you forget. I encourage everybody to get the book. First off, Incident at Devil's Den, read it. There's a whole bunch of other chapters I didn't go over. He encounters a female MIB agent. He talks about his childhood encounters, which I will talk on that a little bit, because it was brought up in the hypnosis. He said when he was abducted as a kid, it was always by four entities. They were little, 3 feet tall. They would come into his room and they would wear masks. Said they were dressed. They would dress as like cartoon monkeys when they would come into his room.
That's so fucked.
To make him feel like he was fine. Yeah. When, like, under the hypnosis, they were unlocking these childhood regressed memories. He said as soon as we would make it onto the crafts, he said, because they would take me onto the little, like, flying saucers. As soon as they would get me onto the crafts, they would take their masks off. And he said, and they were grays, which makes me feel
so haunting. Yeah, it's so haunting. Does the female MIB agent have any significance in the story?
She comes in before the actual encounter happens. So it makes me wonder if maybe it was almost like she was testing him to see, you know, like she knew that he had all these past encounters as a child, almost like she was priming him for this, the Devil's Den incident.
The big one.
Yeah.
Because it is weird, like, when you draw the connections to the TR-3B, because that's dead on description of it, right?
Yeah.
Which, you know, and that's a supposed human tech. But, the you know, then you have the connection where the grays are mechanical or biomechanical entities, right? Which we've heard before.
Yeah.
And then you have the connection that the military is working in conjunction with these things to take part in this, which also goes on to explain how they know about this stuff, the need to silence it. And I will say this. No one is ready for that kind of disclosure ever.
No.
Like if this is the reason why there is no disclosure, I completely understand. Because we will never be ready for a form of disclosure that closely ties our government working hand in hand, doing this horrible shit to people. We will never be ready for that type of disclosure.
Yep.
It would be full on planetary civil war.
Oh yeah. Which that I made note to point out that part whenever he said there were humans that were on the crew and they had military insignia, and you could just hear the OSI guys just go, fuck. Like, how could they mess up this bad? And the hypnosis guy realized, he's like, you will forget them. You are going to forget them. And they ended the hypnosis. They're like, Terry, whenever you wake up, we want you to reach up and pull this light switch and turn the light off on your way out. When you pull that switch, you'll forget everything that happened to you. And I just thought that was weird. Like, they can get in your head to where something like that, if it's that easy that something like that can be manipulated to make you forget by a human person, like, think of what they're capable of, like what aliens essentially are capable of.
Yeah. And yeah, it's really interesting because it really does draw tight-knit parallels that the governments of the world are working with these things.
Yeah.
For whatever reason. Who knows what the reason is?
Yeah, it's crazy. I'm going to end. I wasn't going to read it, but I think I am, just because it sucks. This is a poem that Terry wrote when he was in high school, like as part of his English class. I'm just going to read it. I'm not great at reading poetry and rhyme schemes and stuff, but I think it kind of gets the point across. And I want to encourage everybody to read the book Incident at Devil's Den. There's a part one and there's a part two. Part two, Terry has collected other people's encounters. It's like 38 other people's encounters. He makes it a part two, but it doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the first book. So check out the first book if you want Terry's incident. Second book is other people's incidents. So I encourage you to read it. But this was written when Terry was a teenager. It's a poem called Four Grinning Monkeys. Shadows from the hallway crept into my room. Longed the monkey men, too, I assume. Never before in life had I seen a creature that grinned before I could scream. A candle's flame dances before it grows dim. One monkey's man's shadow had slowly crept in. On his knees and with ease, he is perched on the edge of my bed, if you please. The silence is broken 1 inch from my ear as the monkey man whispered, "My boy, I'm right here." Now the monkeys were four and masked to deceived, children or even grown men, if you please. I started to tremble and cover my head, but the monkeys, all four, crept close to my bed. Outside of my covers, four peeled with delight. These monkey men here will take me this night. Faces with grins approached me to say, "Terry, won't you come with us and play? Come with us now. Give us your hand, and we'll take you to an unbelievable land. You may not remember the last time or when, but come with us now, and you'll see it again." But I said, "I know you're not what you seem. If you are real, then why can't I scream? This night the monkey men take me with ease, but I'm a terrified child, if you please. These things are not men that are born on this earth. Near a star to the west is the place of their birth. It matters not what I do or I say. Tonight, like the others, they will take me away. Where shall we go? How long must I stay? Tell me, you four, Tell me now, I pray. We're going home, Terry. There's no reason for gloom. See that star over there, just east of your moon? We traverse a great distance and pick you up. We're going to return you to bed before breaks the dawn. We must take from you blood and things we do need. Many entities one day will be born of your seed. When I'm taken away, can my mom hear my calls? Across all of this space, through the brick, through my walls. Will she think that I'm lost or have been seized from my bed? Will she worry that I suffer or fear that I'm dead? She'll cry and sob while we go and play if I don't return before dawn brings the day. When I return, will I come back whole? Or will sinister deeds take some terrible toll? We'll soon arrive at a place we do dwell. You'll see it's neither heaven nor is it hell. A place with two suns lights our days. A place that is different, but also the same. The years have passed quickly as life slips from my grasp. Pray, tell me, why did you hurt me, I ask. From earth you take away women and men to tag us and track us towards what an end. We are sentient beings that feel self-aware, but you are just monkeys, and monkeys don't care. As a child, I had no voice to say what may come to pass on some future day. I have the need and right to know what was done to me so many years ago. Surely you knew that day I'd be grown, no longer helpless, no longer alone. Did you not believe that I'd live to confess the memories you stole and failed to suppress? So flawed was your sinister plan all conceived, that others first scoff, but then come to believe. I swear by all that is holy and all that is right, the next time that you come to take me at night, when four little monkeys crouch near my bed, I'll take a revolver and I'll shoot them all dead.
Jesus Christ.
That's from a teenager.
That's dark as fuck.
Yeah. Think of the trauma that was put forth there.
Yeah. Which, I mean, it just goes to show that even though he didn't remember it, he remembered it.
Yeah. Like they planted the seeds to let him know this is what's happening.
But there's still a part of him in that poem that wants to fight back, that wants to retaliate.
Oh, yeah.
Because it knows that what they're saying is a fucking lie.
Yeah. So I'll leave you with that little tidbit there.
Yeah, that's good and dark.
Yeah. And I do. You guys should pick up the book and read it, because it does talk about his encounters as a child and like the trauma of nobody believing him. And it was just
I feel like it's one of the darkest abduction stories I've heard to date.
Yeah, it's
bad. It's dark.
It sucks. I know Terry was making some rounds on some podcasts and right around the pandemic. I don't know if he's still doing it. I know he's getting older, but it would be cool to like get on and talk with him.
It definitely would.
But anyway, I know we went way, way over there, Hollow Cult. Again, thanks for hanging out with us on this Monday. That wraps up the Devil's Den incident. I encourage you to get the book, Incident of Devil's Den by Terry Lovelace. Read it. It's heavy. So with that being said, check us out on all our social medias. You know the drill. And until we meet again, stay safe, stay weird, and don't trust the aliens or the government.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains June 13th through the 23rd. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.